Donald Trump and Ted Cruz campaign in Indiana. Will this state determine the winner of the GOP nomination? The Senate candidates debate. Club for Growth tries to influence Indiana voters. And the state Senate takes up immigration reform. Plus, did a candidate leave his phone at the scene of a crime? That and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 22, 2016.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Donald Trump brought his campaign for president to Indiana and the state fairgrounds. Thousands showed up to hear a speech that lasted almost an hour. It was interrupted several times by protesters, and each time Trump would yell, "Get 'em out." It was a rambling, disjointed, repetitive speech that nevertheless won cheering and applause. As expected, he addressed the decision by the Carrier Corporation to move jobs from Indianapolis to Mexico.
You know, when Carrier, that left here, goes to Mexico and they want to sell their product across the border and no tax, no nothing, we're going to say, "Sorry, folks, we have a nice strong border, we have a nice beautiful wall, you're going to bring it across the border and we're going to charge you a 35% tax after what you did."
What did Donald Trump accomplish on his Indianapolis visit? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, the day before the Trump visit, Carrier workers endorsed Bernie Sanders. How significant is that?
Well, I mean, I think they understand who's much more likely to be supportive. The irony of Donald Trump attacking Carrier for doing what Donald Trump does. I mean, the hats that he's passing out at these rallies are made in China, and so is all of his clothing wear and all. I mean, the hypocrisy of it's overwhelming. You know, he comes here and he fires up his group, okay, and he talks in cliches and generalities, and he obviously makes promises he can't deliver on, but he's tough and he's rough and his grammar's bad and he, you know, doesn't have a prepared speech, so he must be a good guy. It's really kind of amazing when you think about it. It's a reality show gone amok.
Well, it is a very different experience. I've been to a lot of political rallies, a lot of presidential campaign rallies over the years, and this is very different. A lot of people in that crowd have never been to one. It's obvious.
Yeah, I think that's part of the appeal, actually. I think that people who are fed up with the way things are going, who don't feel like government is responsive at all anymore to them, he's tapped into that anger. And I think that's part of the appeal that he has. And he's generating interest. I mean, clearly, there's a lot of people who are showing up at those events who are supportive of him, obviously, but they think he's a man that's going to do, or at least try to do, what he says he's going to do. So, and I think he and Bernie Sanders actually are probably driving some people to show up for Election Day that haven't voted in a long time or maybe never voted before.
Early voting's double what it was four years ago.
And the more interest we have in the primary system, the better, you know. So.
All right. There is some irony here, though, that the people who support Donald Trump buy into that Carrier message, and yet the people most affected by the Carrier decision, the Steelworkers Union, wants nothing to do with Donald Trump. They've had overtures, and they've rejected them.
Well, I think if you look at the traditional relationship between the union leadership and Democratic, those who are seeking the Democratic presidential nomination, it probably has been, over time, more solid than the Republican side of the equation. So I guess it's, you look at Bernie Sanders, and as Ann suggested, there's a decades-long record of advocacy of organized labor. And, you know, he was marching with Verizon picketers in New York back before that primary. he's not a new arrival, shall we say, in that issue. So I guess it's not that surprising, although I'm sure people who are in that predicament and are seeing their jobs disappear will cheer for anybody who advocates some attempt to save their jobs.
One other interesting thing that you had to pick up there was the lack of Republican Party establishment presence there. There was one elected official who spoke, and it was State Representative Bob Morris from Fort Wayne.
Right.
Girl Scout Bob.
Nice reference. Good callback, Andrew, about 5 years ago in his foray with the Girl Scouts and their cookies.
People are going to have to go back and Google that one.
Well, yeah, we'll let them. Communists.
You know, I don't think it's just a clear sign, Jim, that there's that massive split between the Republican organization, the party that as it exists, and this wing that's represented by Donald Trump. And here's the irony that I pick up on. And I think that both sides of the Republican coin on that are more or less, and actually Democrats are too, to a degree. It's fascinating to me that somebody who wants to attain a political office does so by denigrating that very same office over and over and over again, just to demolish the institution. And then they wonder why people are angry when they get into position and things don't change. Or that they don't have respect for that office because they themselves have shown so little respect for it.
And he's a product of the media. And one of the things he did there is bash the media. He said 90%, 80%, right. I think he said, are dishonest.
Right.
And yet another...
It's not, an inch above 75.
Well, but another irony for me...
Kind of made
was,
my point right there.
He has a very liberal credential policy. There were high school journalists. There was a libertarian blogger. There was a reporter from a gay publication. I mean,
he's playing.
But John makes a good point on this. I mean, for years, going back even before Newt Gingrich, the anger that was stirred up towards the institutions, towards all the institutions of government by the Republican Party, helped give the nexus for the Tea Party, and now it's out of control. Now that fire's burning so hard, they can't control it. And they're looking, saying, how did this happen? Well, they started the whole thing.
Keep in mind, too, it's not just attacks that would erode belief or confidence in government
Any
entities.
Institution.
Well, it's also the party itself. Look at what happened after the Colorado primary when Reince Priebus, the national chairman, was sort of in the gun sights of the Trump campaign, saying that this was all a distortion.
Here in Indianapolis, he called the delegate selection process crooked.
Rigged. Yeah.
And so it's not just anti-government. It seems to be
anti. We should let Mike defend that since he's a delegate.
He's playing the media like a violin. I mean, it's amazing to me. The reason that he's successful with the coverage that he gets is because he is as bombastic as he is and calls out the media, because he's tapped into that same anger of people who don't think that the media is fair. And so he's doing that over and over and over again. And your folks, your brethren, are showing up in mass because he's good TV and he's good radio.
But also, one of the things journalists do is they pick out coherent sentences and you don't get any idea just how random his remarks are.
Well, and that's why he hasn't had to spend a lot of money on television.
Right.
I mean, he's getting it all for free he's lambasting the people who are giving it to him for free. It's a beautiful system.
He is buying television ads. In Indiana now. He is. All right. A day later, Ted Cruz followed Trump to Indiana. The Texas senator talked with voters at Shapiro's Deli and then spoke to a state GOP fundraising dinner.
I have to admit, before addressing you guys, I sat back and reflected on one of my favorite movies, Hoosiers. And I did a little Googling on quotes from Hoosiers, and you know, one of the best quotes is, "Look, mister, there are two kinds of dumb. Guy that gets naked, runs out in the snow, and barks at the moon, and the guy who does the same thing in my living room. First one don't matter. The second one, you're kind of forced to deal with." Well, I'm sorry to tell you, the federal government has become the guy who's getting naked and barking in your room, in your living room.
Mike McDaniel, is this Cruz country?
You know what? He's going to be competitive here. I think that he's going to do well here. And they're running a good campaign. I mean, he's on a roll right now. I mean, New York, everybody expected Trump to win New York. So He was good last night. I was at the dinner, and I heard him speak. The first time I heard him speak in person, I thought he's an outstanding speaker. And I think going to Shapiro's was a masterstroke for them. I think it takes them away from all of the settings where you know everything's controlled and you can just be with people. It's more like what you'd see in New Hampshire or someplace like that. And I think that's smart for them to do. So I think they're going to be competitive. I think our state is up for grabs, Kasich and with Cruz.
They're putting a lot of emphasis here. He made two stops. His wife, Heidi Cruz, had a meet and greet with Republicans in Martinsville, and then she had three more the next day. We're told he's coming back for a couple of rallies.
He doesn't stop Trump here. He might as well pack it in. So, I mean, it's not surprising he'd be spending a lot of time here. And he was obviously sucking up to the governor. You know, he endorses RFRA. He thinks that's the right kind of line to draw on social issues. He talks about job creation. Doesn't mention we lost 9,000 jobs last month and the second highest state in the union to do that, and our unemployment above 5% and with 38th in per capita income. That's the kind of government he wants to see nationwide. We'll see how much attraction he has.
You mentioned the governor. Mike Pence had a private meeting with Donald Trump, which the governor's staff tells us was done at the request of Trump. Chris Christie apparently came along, took part in it. Then the governor had a private meeting with Cruz.
Right. Was Chris Christie there, too?
Going to meet with Kasich.
He's going to meet with Kasich next week. What's going on there? Is he asking for something? Are they asking for his endorsement?
Well, I think a little of both. I mean, I think it's good policy to meet with all of them, but I think it's interesting. If he makes an endorsement before the election, I'll be shocked. I don't know that you want to go that far out onto the limb. But people running in your party's election, you should have a conversation with them if you're the governor of the state of Indiana. It's fascinating to watch the motorcades roll up into the governor's mansion and the meet and greets there. We don't associate that with the governor's residence, and so it looks a little Washington to me, but it's kind of an interesting thing.
Speaking of which, we like to call it the governor's residence.
Whatever.
One reason, I think, for the vigor that we're seeing and sort of the enthusiasm and the activity is that while this primary is certainly primarily about delegates, it's not only about delegates. If you look at Kasich, for instance, who is mathematically eliminated from getting the necessary number of delegates,
he can only win on a second or third ballot.
And so what this is, I think, is all a secondary game. Another level, if you will, of the chess, another, like where they used to play three-tier chess on Star Trek or whatever. I just identified myself as a nerd. I'm sorry. Her friend told me about it. But part of this is momentum, the perception of being seen as relevant and being seen not as a loser in the final stages of the primary campaign. So, it's about delegate counts, but it really is about more, and that's why Kasich was benefited from his performance, for instance, in New York, I think.
We haven't seen Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders here.
Chelsea is coming this next week, and I think Hillary will be... Hillary will be coming. Well, you mentioned Cruz's wife was here.
Bernie Sanders is on TV here.
Yes, Bernie Sanders is on TV. I expect they'll both be here.
Okay. Indiana's not as important to the Democrats.
This is do or die for the Republicans. If they don't stop Trump here, I don't think they stop him on the first ballot.
Well,
so we'll see.
On the D side, you get this crazy, wild-eyed socialist. Then you also have Bernie Sanders.
No, so. You almost blew the line.
Yeah, you almost blew the line.
I almost trumped it.
I'll take one of those over right wing.
We'll see. I bet you don't win Indiana. I'll take that bet right now.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: who will you vote for in the Indiana primary? Your choices are A, Donald Trump, B, Ted Cruz, C, John Kasich, D, Hillary Clinton, E, Bernie Sanders. Last week's question: are you planning to vote in the Indiana primary? 74% said yes, 21% said I'm voting early, 5% said no. I want to know who the 14 people are who aren't going to the polls but took time to vote in the Week in Review poll. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The GOP candidates for U.S. Senate met in their only debate this week. Todd Young and Marlon Stutzman clashed on, among other things, battling terrorism.
This sounds like a lead from behind foreign policy. This sounds like Barack Obama 2.0. You deserve a national security conservative to serve you in the United States Senate, and that has always meant advancing U.S. leadership.
And I wasn't going to follow President Obama's strategy. I believe that if we're going to go in and deal with the root of the problem, that we have to go in full force. That's a decision that needs to be made with the Council of the Congress, with the Senate, and of course the White House. The President has to lead on this.
All right, the big story in the Senate race this week, however, is an AP report that said Stutzman used campaign funds for a family vacation to the Reagan Library in California. He has since repaid the money. John Ketzenberger, will that story do lasting damage to the Stutzman campaign?
You know, it could. It goes to the heart of credibility, and I think some of the criticism I've seen of the expenditures has been, look, he's just like all the rest. And, of course, his whole campaign is built around being the Washington outsider. So if that muddies the message in a lot of people's minds, it could have some lasting effect on the election.
And in some way, those kinds of issues that come up are easier to explain, to, you know, put together, explain, and put a bow on it if you're the opponent trying to drive home a message than some of the more nuanced assessments of issue positions and policies. I mean, this is an easier get if you're an opponent looking to score points.
Well, and it's already being used in social media and email pieces by the Young campaign. I expect they're going to hit this one pretty hard.
I would think they probably would. It's for Marlon Stutzman, it's unfortunate that this happened so close to the primary election. You know, if this were something that happened a few months ago and you had time to get around it and move on, but when it happens 10 or 12 days out from the election, then you can take a real hit off something like this, and I think they probably have. But at the end of the day, it all boils down to that war that's on television. And right now, in the last 2 weeks, he's taken a hit on that too. I think there's been a total of, it's like 19-1 television for Young versus Stutzman. So
he's making use of his money advantage, and he's saying things that are clearly incorrect. I mean, he's going to single-handedly defeat ISIS. He's going to repeal Obamacare because it's cost 100,000 people insurance. Okay, actually, it's provided insurance to 350,000 people. And if defeating ISIS was easy, it would have been done under Bush. And it would have been done under any number of different ways. It's just, it's ridiculous because on this, I agree, shouldn't have used money for a family campaign. On the other hand, the person who's been fined by the FEC for not following the law is Todd Young, not Marlon Stutzman.
He for failed a previous to race.
Yeah, but still, he failed to follow the rules the same as he did with his ballot accessibility issue here. He doesn't pay attention to detail. That's for sure, even though he is a Marine.
Again, you can
A Marine.
Yeah. That debate, was it enlightening?
I don't know that very many people saw it. And that's why I say the TV war is what's important now in this final stretch drive. Because when you have one big public debate, and if you happen to miss it that night for any reason, how are you going to know? So there aren't enough debates to really make a difference anymore in these major races, and so it's all about the television.
Well, we've had enough presidential debates on
the Republican
side. I agree,
but we've only had one.
But many
of them have been 2 hours long, and there have been a bunch of them.
Debates can make a difference. Richard Murdoch can tell you that they can make a difference, but that's because if you're saying something, if there's a gaffe or there's a statement that's perceived as outrageous, it's not necessarily the initial
election debate, John. It wasn't a primary debate.
I'm just saying that you talk about the impact of debates. In and of themselves, they may not have much impact, but if there is a perceived gaffe, whether it's primary or general, I'm merely making the point
that's true anywhere, though.
Right. It's the secondary, the ripple effect that is perhaps more consequential.
Anytime somebody misspeaks in the way Murdoch did, it's going to be replayed in the paid media enough times to make an impact.
People watching the debate made a lot of commentary about how Todd Young kept referring to himself as a Marine, kept referring to Marlon Stutzman as a career politician, lots of buzzwords. But he's just trying to make sure that the buzzwords get into whatever soundbite gets used, right?
Well, and that's the unfortunate nature of the debate process. John was talking about the gaffe prevention strategies. And so you don't really get a debate anymore. You get a managed hour where you try not to make any mistakes on one hand and try to get in the points that you want to make on the other hand. So they make for really not very good television, unfortunately.
Well, look, who was it, Marco Rubio who called out? Who did he call out back for saying the same thing, you know, the punchline over at Costin?
No, it's Chris Christie.
Oh, that's right, Christie talking about Marco Rubio. Right. How quickly we forget. It's a distant memory now.
Neither one of them are in the race anymore. The Club for Growth is spending big money to influence the Indiana primary. It will run ads attacking Donald Trump, and it already has ads attacking congressional candidate Kip Thom in the 3rd District. They are meant to be in support of Jim Banks.
Kip Thom is on the board of a corporate group that donates to liberals, including Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And he sat on a quasi-governmental board that doled out corporate welfare while hiding how it actually spent tax dollars. The real Kip Thom? A liberal insider.
John Schwanis, will those ads be effective?
Maybe at the margins. I mean, you're talking about now, granted, there are front runners in the race, but it's a long ballot, as you'll recall, probably one of the longest ones of any congressional primary. So you're already going to have some fragmentation of support. And so every, you know, a few points here and a few points there in a race like that could make a difference. Again, will it turn on this issue? Probably not. Again, at the margins, have an impact, perhaps.
Well, you got two state senators in that race, Liz Brown and Jim Banks. And Kip Thom is a first-time politician, a businessman. Sounds like there's a reason they're going after him, and that's that he's doing pretty well.
Well, one, he's had a long career there. Two, he's well-known. And three, he's got money to do his own campaign. So he's been effective in that regard as well. And in this atmosphere where everybody's trying to paint themselves as an outsider, he doesn't have to work very hard to do that.
Yeah. Who's going to win that race?
I don't know. I mean, you've got wing nuts on one side and you've got an outsider on the other. You get that many splits in the vote and there's only one woman running up there. It's hard to tell who's going to. Whoever it is in that primary is probably not going to be good.
You're going to have a Republican win that congressional seat regardless.
That's a prediction
the primary is what matters up there. That ad from the Club for Growth, I mean, they're criticizing Kip Thom for service on the Indiana Economic Development Corporation board where he was appointed by Mitch Daniels. To call him a liberal for doing that's maybe tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I tell you what, you asked, are these ads effective? I saw the one today for the first time where they're in support of Cruz to beat Trump because they say the numbers don't add up. I don't know if you've seen that spot.
I have not.
Saw it this morning for the first time. But what struck me when I read about what they were going to do, I heard them say, or I thought I read, that they were going to spend $1.5 million
in Indiana
on the Trump ad, the anti-Trump ad.
Right.
That's a lot of money in 10 days. Okay?
Yeah.
So can it be effective? Yes. And the fact of the matter is, with that chalkboard they've got in this ad I'm talking about where they talk about the numbers on that, that could be very effective at that kind of buy in 10 days. So they're putting a lot of money into this. It could have an effect.
These numbers have never added up, and it's never bothered and supported.
The question was about the commercials, and telling you that one, before it's over, 1.5, isn't that a lot in 10 days?
But that's the tone.
Former Indiana Congressman David McIntosh is the head of the Club for Growth. Do you think they're spending all that money here because of his roots? Or is this just coincidence?
Part of it.
Well, and if they know that if they don't stop Trump here, they probably don't stop him.
And it's not even the tone. I mean, it's not the substance here. It's the tone. You can make anything. We can make Mike McDaniel say, Mike McDaniel was seen sitting across from former Democratic state chair, week in and week out for a number of years. And if you do it with the right intonation,
nobody
and sort of
that.
Nobody would believe that. But if you have the grainy photos and so forth, it doesn't even matter what they're saying. It's like, I guess there's you know, Satan is among us. Look out.
Finally, there's been a case of stolen campaign signs in Hamilton County. The victim is Rick McKinney, a GOP candidate for re-election to the county council. He reported 3 large banners stolen, and when he went to investigate, found a cell phone at the site where one of the signs was removed. The Hamilton County Sheriff's Department determined that the phone belonged to McKinney's opponent, Jeff Hearn. The case has been referred to the county prosecutor, Ann Delaney. What's the moral to that story?
keep your cell phone with you or don't take it with you. I mean, you know, it is just really interesting what's happening in the Hamilton County and in Republican politics up there.
Between there are two parties
county
in
chair,
Hamilton County.
Oh,
they're both
clear.
Republican.
It's clear, and they don't like each other. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Is that different from any other Republican factions across the country?
Stealing signs has been kind of an art form for a long time, but generally you don't put your fingerprints all over that operation yourself.
And you try not to steal the large $200 signs.
Was it a roundabout? Because I'd make the argument. I'd make the argument I was driving so fast about around the roundabout,
right,
my cell phone flew out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Hearn should make some kind of argument because he hasn't spoken up yet.
I agree with that.
He better go say he was investigating the theft of one of his signs.
Should answer that call. We've seen some politicians say, preemptively, my cell phone was out of my possession. I don't know what happened to it for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we've seen that work apparently in recent months.
We didn't have any questionable material on it. So
that's another question.
Yeah.
Wow. We're giving people a lot of things to Google today.
All these review for this week.
Yeah.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.